Hi, this is John Jackson Miller, and you're listening to the Star Wars Universe Show.
You should all consider yourselves to be in my power.
Hi, and welcome to the fourth Star Wars Universe Show's podcast. Here is Ares, your host during the next minutes. After a little break since October, we're back, stronger in the Force. Please just excuse me if my English is not perfect. Today, with my friend Jeremy, aka Bobby One, we're speaking about the KOTOR's Ultimate Story Arc and JJM's Legacy. So let's go to the first part of our interview with John Jackson Miller concerning Knight of the Old Republic. So, John, thank you very much to be here for the Star Wars Universe show.
Merci. Very happy to be here.
That's great. So, John, the KOTOR series have just ended in France. Do you have any regrets about this series? Would you have liked to talk more about some characters, secondary stories, or other things?
Well, the Knights of the Old Republic comic series went for 50 issues in the United States, and actually, you know, is tied with the Legacy series for the third longest run that a Star Wars comic book series had. So, you know, it's really difficult to, you know, imagine when you're beginning a series that it would go so long. And I think that we got the opportunity to tell quite a lot of stories. Are there more that could be told? Certainly. You know, will there be more that we can do with these characters in the future? It's possible. But, you know, I certainly feel that, you know, over the course of, you know, more than 4 years, you know, of comic books, plus, you know, we also had some additional fiction, and we did a I co-authored a book for the Star Wars role-playing game about the KOTOR setting. So, you know, I feel, you know, that we had a pretty good opportunity to do a lot of stuff. Certainly there are things that you know, I could have written more about, and that we can do more about in the future, but you know, I feel pretty good, as you know, that series ended, that you know, we told a complete story.
So we saw some of your sketches from the Tyris Jedi Tower. As a writer, to what extent or in which way can you influence on artists' work?
Well, I give the artists information about what things should look like. To some degree, I let the artists, you know, make up their own minds about what the characters should look like, and you know, design. I try to give them latitude, leeway to, you know, draw characters that they're going to enjoy drawing, and that will be interesting to them. With the spaceships as well, sometimes I leave that entirely in the artist's hands. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I will provide some sketches, or in the case of a couple of things that I've done, I've actually you know, built models with my son using Lego blocks. And in fact, on StarWars.com, here, as we're recording this, there is a piece that we've just done showing some of those models. And in fact, you know, when I did the Knight Errant novel, the prose novel, I didn't have any artists to help design things. And so the main spacecraft that is used in that book was based on a design that my son and I built, and then I sketched out and figured out, you know, what would be everything on that ship, where it would be located, and, you know, what the armaments would be and that sort of thing. It's not something that everybody has to do or you know, when they're writing their own stuff. I just like to know where all the guns are on the ship, so it helps me in writing.
Do you mean that your son can also influence the artist's work?
Well, when I send them some ideas, they can go with them sometimes. I think the idea is, to the greatest extent possible, the artist should have the freedom to do what they want to do. I do occasionally have a story need, though, for a ship to look a certain way or have a design that is a certain way. In the Knights of the Old Republic series, for example, there was a ship that was, half designed by the artist Bongdazo, and yet the cockpit of the ship, the bridge of the ship, was based on a design of mine, because I needed the location to look a certain way. So it is a collaboration.
Okay.
Personally, I love KOTOR mainly because it's an unusual series which is set in everyday life in the galaxy, with no big battles full of Sith. Were you aware that you could disappoint some comic books readers telling an unexpected story? Some of those readers were disappointed and tended to find that the story was weak on the second arc because of a lack in action and rhythm.
Well, the thing that one of my editors, Randy Stradley at Dark Horse, likes to say is, you don't give readers the story they want; you give them the story that they need. You don't just do what people are expecting. You try to do something original that is unexpected. Otherwise, if you only did exactly what people were asking for, it would be boring. When the word came out that we were doing the Knights of the Old Republic comic series, the immediate response by some people was that it should do nothing else other than to illustrate exactly everything that happened in the video game. The problem is the video game was a completed story and it was already told. We could have simply told some of the backstory from that only, but there are a lot of comics readers that didn't play the video game and a lot of video game players that weren't going to read the comics. I think our idea from the beginning was to do something separate, and one of the interesting things about this is that the entire Knights of the Old Republic setting, that time frame, and even the title Knights of the Old Republic did not come from the game, but it came from the Dark Horse comics that were published in the early 90s, the Tales of the Jedi series. I think that when we went into it, the whole idea was that we were going to create something new that would be connected in some ways to the events of the time. But one of the things that I've said many times is that when I created the story of Zane Carrick, we did not know when it would be set relative to the events in the video game. We could well have set it 10 or 15 years earlier, in which case there would have been very little material about the game. I decided that I wanted to have some material about the game, but not so much that it would become a story about that instead of a story about this young man, and also the story about Jor-El, which was the one of the storylines that took most of the entire series, discovering the secrets about her and how that was tied up with the Mandalorians. So I think that there is room out there to tell a completely new story and use some elements that already exist, but we really, we never set out when we're doing something to, if we had intended to adapt the game and simply do that, we would have done that. My hope is that we did surprise some people with our decisions, and that on balance they were happy about it.
So we talked about a little about the video game, but there's another question about two characters, Revan and Malak. Was it considered at one point, or will it be considered in the near future to tell their story? And do you understand the disappointment of the KOTOR video game fans, despite several revelations about Revan and the Revanchist on the last story arc?
Yeah, I certainly understand. I think the thinking when I was coming at it was that, you know, we're 7 years before the events of the video game. That's quite a ways behind. And so we would be able to show some things about those characters and what was going on. But we weren't going to be able to, you know, follow them everywhere, especially, again, since they were secondary to the main plot line of the series. You know, again, you know, when the series was first developed, never were the, you know, names Revan and Malak even mentioned in the initial proposal, because we didn't know where, exactly when it would be set. It was something where later on I came in and looked at it and said, you know, this series is set close enough to the events of the video games. The events of the video games are influencing what the galaxy is like right now. It would be wrong not to show some of what's going on. And so I brought them in. And I made sure when we brought them in that we didn't just bring them in to do a cameo appearance, just a short guest appearance. I tried to make sure that the appearances did something for those characters, and it was not something gratuitous where we just brought them in to sell a few more copies of the comic book in a given issue. My feeling on that is always you don't want to do something that's going to confine another writer who might be doing something with those characters at some time in the future. It might even be me being the other writer who would be confined by, you know, doing a whole lot showing what was going on with those characters when they were not really the central focus. So I do believe that we did about as much as I had intended to do with those characters during this 1 year, which again is a good bit before the real events of the Mandalorian War. So we're right in the very beginning of it at this point.
Demogorgon's story is really fascinating. Why did you decide to focus on the story of a single Mandalorian and not tell us more about the wars with Mandalore the Ultimate?
Well, we saw some of what was going on with those characters. I think we probably saw more of Cassus Fett than we saw of Mandalore the Ultimate, who only really appeared in one or two sequences. Again, I think this goes back to the whole idea that, we're not really approaching the comic series as a chance to tell the history of characters that we already know about. The name of the series was not The New Essential Chronology Part 2. My function there was to, you know, create some new characters and to draw upon the rest of the world around them and, you know, show how they interacted with some of those other characters like Cassus Fett and like Mandalore the Ultimate. I think in the case of Demogorgon, this was a character that was with us for almost the entire series, even if many readers didn't know that was him. Mm-hmm. I was able to do so much more with that character because I had created him, and he was not a character that was due to be someplace else in 2 or 3 years. If you think about it, if Mandalore the Ultimate had been the main villain in the series, I would not have been able to kill him or do anything else like that, because he was a character that had a date in the future. He had a destiny already. We already knew the answers about that character. I think that speaks also to Revan and Malik as well. We have a dynamic here like you have with the prequel movies to a degree, because you know what is going to happen to those characters in the future. And while you can still tell some interesting stories about how those characters became who they became, you know, there is a little bit less danger in terms of what may happen to them. You know, Zane Carrick and some of his allies, any one of them could have died at any time because they did not have a role in the video game.
You refer to the Tales of the Jedi series, but the thing about Master Arca Jedd seemed to be quite awkward, don't you think?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how you would mean. I will say that the whole idea with Demogal's obsession with Arca Jedd was something that I had imagined in the beginning and continued with the entire time. The fun thing about the Mandalorian scientists that we showed in the series, both Demogal and Pulsifer, who was in the Vector storyline, they both completely misunderstood how the Force worked and how the Jedi got their powers. Neither of them believed that the Force existed. Pulsifer believed that it was, you know, magical items, artifacts, talismans, charms that the Jedi carried or that the Sith carried that gave them their powers. And of course he was wrong and on certain parts of that, and he paid the price. Demogal thought that it was entirely in the blood. He thought that it was entirely genetic and that the Force did not exist, and that all he had to do to get a portion of the magic that the Jedi had was to you know, find the greatest Jedi around and you know, try to replicate him. So I think that that is what we told the story of as far as he was concerned. And again, we find out that, like Pulsifer, he is a failure, and that what he imagined to be the way things worked was not in fact the way they did.
Okay, John, thank you very much. This is the end of the first part of this interview. Let's meet next week to listen to the rest of this interview about Knight Errant. In the meantime, stay connected.
Don't fail me again.